milkshake.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
This is Remember That Film, the show which covers a look back on memories, nostalgia, and behind-the-scenes facts that you may not have known about your favourite films.
The premise of Breakfast Club was deceptively simple. Five high school students from different cliques are forced to spend a Saturday together in detention. Viewers can probably see the resolution together from a mile away, but they find out they are not so different after all. But it's the way that the writer and director moves us from a point A to point B that establishes the film as a modern classic. Although it was originally intended to be his directorial debut, hence the small cast and single location, 16 Candles ended up being up first, and even after the success of the film, there were still some investors that felt Hughes was too inexperienced to helming The Breakfast Club. Ultimately, the film's low $1 million budget minimised the risk and concerns. Even before a camera started rolling, the hope was that this project would kick off a franchise. Hughes envisioned several sequels which would check in on those characters every 10 years or so. There are several reasons why this plan did not come to fruition, which we will touch on later. Even though the scenario raises lots of possibilities, it's hard to imagine another fitting conclusion to the one we get here. It's good to imagine what happens to these people the following Monday. Everyone has their favourite John Hughes movie, and it's obviously impossible to say which one is the best, but it's hard to imagine a better scope of the example of the talented filmmaker than this one. It shows everything we love about Hughes' work, and after 3 decades of its release, this is still a classic film. And now I've got with me special guest Emily Horton.
Yeah.
We had your co-host Jack on from the Jack and Em Drive show on Wednesday afternoons.
Yeah, we had her the other week. She did The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
And now this week
we've got you on a couple of weeks later because Valentine's Day was coming up, or is coming up. Well, it is today.
Yeah,
on
actually.
Friday.
It is too.
Yeah.
Valentine's
Day. So we're trying to figure out what to do, you know, one of those cliche chick flicks or something. But then I think you mentioned, The Breakfast Club, and it made us think, there is a bit of a love story in it,
A couple
of love stories throughout it. Controversial, which we'll get into now, some of the stuff you probably wouldn't get away with today.
No.
With some of it in there. So tell us about, we're going to cover The Breakfast Club today, all the way back to 1985, so that's 35 years ago.
Yeah.
That's scary.
I wasn't actually born
back
then.
Yeah, I was 4 years old. So.
I was
no,
just
3 years old,
thought.
Yeah. 3 years old. Yeah, so at the time, I don't really have a memory until I was about 3 or 4 years old too. So tell us about the first time you saw Breakfast Club and the memories behind it. Where was it? Obviously, wouldn't have been at the movies.
No, it wasn't. But the first time I saw The Breakfast Club, I believe, was on TV, and it was on late at night, and I was supposed to be in bed, but I just stayed up and I watched it. And I was in high school at the time too, so a lot of the issues that they talked about and a lot of the themes and things like that I really related to at the time. And even though it was in the 80s, the film was based, there's still a lot of relevant issues that were in it that I could relate to.
There was, because I grew up in the 90s,
yeah.
As a teenager, so there wasn't, you know, social media, or the internet was only just starting to come through with dial-up and all that sort of thing. So a lot of the things in the 90s came through from the 80s, the teen angst.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
absolutely.
All those sort of topics.
And all the pressures from your parents to do well, and it kind of, there's a lot of themes within the movie that a lot of teenagers can still relate to.
That's right. And in fact, you wouldn't believe it, I actually didn't watch this movie till about 2006 because I had a friend that lent me a few DVDs at the time. And I heard about this Breakfast Club because I kept getting, you know, you look like Michael Hall.
I see that now.
Yeah, see, when I was a lot younger too, I probably had more hair at the front. And sort of the undercut sort of thing. So I got a lot of that, so I thought, I got to go watch this to see what all this is about, why I look like the nerdy one in it. And it was a bit like, you know, 12 Angry Men was another one where it was all filmed all in one room.
Yeah.
With 12 people, where this one you only had the 5 main actors. You had the teacher, who we've seen in Paul Gleason, who was in Die Hard.
Oh, yes, he was.
Yeah, too. So he was the teacher. And we had the janitor, so you really only had 7 actors and some of the parents were actually the real parents of of the kids
That's
in it,
right.
the teenagers.
I
in
didn't
it.
Realize yeah. that until I rewatched the movie.
Yeah.
And looked it up, and I was like, wow. So a lot of the parents of the actual children drove them to school and then picked them up from school
yeah.
in the movie.
And Brian's sister too was actually
yeah.
his real sister.
No way.
Yeah,
I didn't
and
know
all that.
That.
But one of the songs, which we'll get into, it actually was written for this film, and a lot of people do remember this film based on the song when you hear it, is Simple Minds.
Yes, it's a very iconic track, a very iconic 80s pop rock sort of ballad. And, yeah, you can't listen to this track without thinking of The Breakfast Club.
Let's go with it now. Simple Minds, Don't You Forget About Me.
Woo! What day is it? The date? What year?
What movies were released on the week and year that it was at the box office?
And going back to the box office now, and you wouldn't believe the week this came out back in 1985. February 15.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, the weekend of February 15 to 18 back in 1985. And other stuff that came out this week in the top 10, Heaven Help Us, a movie I haven't seen, Mrs. Sofell, Mischief, Mickey and Maul at number 7, A Passage to India, I have heard of that film, that was at number 6, Vision Quest at number 5, The Killing Fields is one I've heard of at number 4. Now, The Breakfast Club came in at number 3 on the box office. I mean, this was a budget that only was about $1 million to make. Then we had Witness, that's a well-known movie with Harrison Ford.
That's right, I didn't realise that came out at the same time.
Yeah. But number one that weekend actually would have been hard to pass was Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a good movie too.
And there was talk they're going to make a fourth one.
Oh, really?
Now as well. Yeah.
Like today, modern day.
Yeah, it's going to. Netflix has actually signed up since Eddie Murphy did that Dolemite Is My Name last year. They've signed up to do a fourth one. I think the third one was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
So just like Lethal Weapon 5, that was also making the news. That's where they really are too old for this crap. Yeah. We're going to go with another track now, and then we're going to get behind the scenes because there's a lot to get through with that one. Let's go with Elizabeth Daly with Waiting.
Waiting.
Let's now get behind the scenes.
Time to get behind the scenes of all different types of facts that happen behind the scenes, or director notes and writers and some useless facts too. I had a few of those with The Fifth Element, but they're just fun ones that you might not know. And you've actually brought some this week too.
Yeah, and some of these facts I didn't realise until I rewatched it recently, that you know right at the end of the film how it kind of concludes with the letter that Brian writes in for all of them.
Yeah.
It, at the beginning is when they actually start to narrate the writing of the letter. And at that point, they tell you that it's Saturday, March 24th, 1984, and it's 7 a.m. when they go to school. So they are in detention from 7 a.m. on a Saturday till 4 p.m., That is a pretty harsh punishment.
That's a long time. And the clocks were 20 minutes fast too,
yeah,
remember?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So could you imagine these days having your detention on a Saturday from 7 a.m. till 4 p.m.? That's longer than a normal school day.
Yeah, I think when I was in high school, Bathurst High, the detention
Bathurst
was just...
Bathurst High represent.
Yeah, the detention was just lunchtime,
yeah.
I think. In your lunch hour, which was about 50
really
minutes.
Naughty, you'd get suspended. But,
yeah. Or timeout room, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was one there. Still is there now, but there was in the 90s. Yeah.
So that's really funny that that's the sort of thing, the difference between then and now, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how each of them have their own different stories. And I like that that comes out. And they're all different stereotypically... high school labelled characters, where you've got your jock and you've got
yeah.
your brains and you've got the criminal and you've got your rich, what they call her. They call her the princess. And
yeah.
then you've got the athlete. And then at the end it all comes to a point where you realise that they all have things in common regardless of those stereotypes they fit into. And I really like that as the moral of the story, finding the similarities.
They all figure out they're all
yeah.
the same in the end. Yeah,
and they all
the
face
end,
similar
yeah.
problems regardless of where they come from, who they are, their parents, and they're all dealing with similar issues. They're all teenagers and they're all going through that crazy puberty, hormonal, angsty
yeah.
phase of their life.
Because you look back on that, you think, you know, when we were teenagers, you think, how did we get through all that?
I know.
Yeah. And you can't tell, you know, a 16 or 17-year-old then, you know, oh, this is what it will be like, and in 10 years later you won't even be thinking about
no.
this. Because at that time, in hindsight, it's not what the person wants to hear.
And it feels like the whole world is on your shoulders when
yeah.
you're a teenager.
Yeah.
You're trying to figure out how to become an adult. And
what you're going to do in your life, yeah.
Yeah. And you still got that pressure from your family, and you're still, not necessarily pressure, but in this film there's a lot of pressure from families and roles and responsibilities. And then... also the authority figure, so the vice principal who holds them in detention, he's quite an authoritarian character.
Mm.
So that plays a bit of a role where they're all resisting that authority.
Yeah.
And that's quite a common theme in as a teenager in real life and in the movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got some stuff now to go through, and there's quite a few.
All
a
right,
few
cool,
notes to go through here. Okay, so in the scene in which all the characters sit in a circle on the floor in the library and tell stories about why they were in detention, it was not scripted. Writer and director John Hughes told them all to ad-lib.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That makes that.
Because I was thinking
scene.
About that last night when I was watching that scene. I thought, this actually feels real that they're having a conversation
yeah.
here. Because we had Claire, the redhead, she got in trouble for shopping.
Yeah.
Then we had the other girl. I can't think of her name now.
Allison. She's the compulsive
it.
Liar.
Yeah, she's the compulsive liar, but she just, which is why we don't really know why she
is
in there, because
yeah.
she says she's in there because she had nothing better to do, but she's a compulsive liar, so we don't know. The jock, of course, taped someone's butt cheeks together. That was Andrew, Emilio Estefan.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Charlie Sheen's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still doing a lot of TV now too. He doesn't look anything like he did in this movie. Yeah.
May have had a bit of work done. Who knows? Who knows?
And we had Brian who, you know, serious issue at the time, you know, all the pressure and feeling of suicide. Who
yeah.
had a flare gun in in his locker. And then we also had Bender, of course.
Yeah, and who, he was facing a lot of issues.
For setting the alarms, false alarms off. Yeah. Yeah, he had a lot of issues, as a lot of the film was focused on him early on. Speaking of which, Judd Nelson, who was John Bender, stayed in character off-camera, even bullying Molly Ringwald.
Oh, really?
Yeah. John Hughes nearly fired him over this, but ironically, Paul Gleason, Richard Vermin, who was the vice principal, defended Nelson, saying that he was a good actor and he was trying to get into character.
Well, he definitely put that across in the film.
Because you've seen people like that at school, that's for sure.
Yes, we all know that one Bender character.
Yeah. Judd Nelson improvised a part of the closing of the film where Bender raises his fist in defiance. He was supposed to just walk into the sunset, so to speak, and John Hughes asked him to play around with a few actions. When he was done and he was finishing up, Nelson throws his fist up without running it by anyone. Everyone loved it, and it also became an iconic symbol of the 1980s.
It is one of the most iconic symbols of the 80s.
The fist
and
pump,
that film. Like, you can't picture The Breakfast Club without that iconic fist pump in the air.
Yeah. You see it a lot in sport and, you know, every now and then, like, yes. John Hughes wrote the screenplay to the movie in just 2 days, on July the 4th and 5th, back in 1982. In 2010, Molly Ringwald, who played Claire, and Anthony Michael Hall, told Vanity Fair magazine that John Hughes was respective to actors and actresses. Improvisations, and some of them including O'Brien's reason for having a fake ID, so I can vote, made it into the final film.
That's really cool.
Bender's flinch when Vermin fakes a punch was genuine. Judd Nelson really thought that Paul Gleason was going to hit him. It actually does look like that.
Yeah. No, when you think about it, it's genuine.
Yeah.
It is genuine.
It was originally suggested that there would be several sequels to this movie occurring every 10 years in which The Breakfast Club would get back together. This did not come to pass due to the volatile relationships between John Hughes and Judd Nelson. Hughes stated that he would never work with Nelson again. Also, it was unclear whether or not Hughes still held his will against his off-cast starlet Molly Ringwald. They had a falling out in the late 80s after Ringwald decided to move on from the teen film genre to pursue more adult roles, thus serving her relationship with Hughes. Also, she was in 16 Candles as well, wasn't she? Yeah.
And a few of the other cast were in that as well.
Yeah.
I believe.
Molly Ringwald was originally asked to play Alison, even though she wanted to play Claire. She eventually convinced John Hughes and the studio was given the part. Although there's some discretion on this, other cast and crew members have said Molly was originally cast as Claire, but tried to pressure the studio and Hughes to let her play the punk goth chick Alison. But Hughes put his foot down and said no, she was wrong for the part. She had to stick to Claire. Molly disagrees with this and says she'd had her sights set on Claire the whole time. Since Claire was so unlike her, she unlike anything she played before, it had a handle on Claire, basing her on her sister. Which is interesting because Molly's sister in 16 Candles was also a snotty bitch. Molly said Hughes had pushed her to do Alison, but the psycho outsider chick was too much like the role she played in 16 Candles. So that might be why they've had a bit of a falling out too.
So there was meant to be a sequel. And there just never was.
Yeah.
But in 2016, I think it was, they did a revamp of the movie. I forget what the correct term is. Where they...
Reboot.
Where they take it back into the studio, fix it up, make it high def, and then re-release it.
Ah.
So it kind of gave it a new life. I hope a lot of people who hadn't seen it before kind of were reminded of it and maybe saw it if they hadn't before.
Hopefully, yeah. I watched the Blu-ray last night for the first time, Blu-ray copy, yeah. Judd Nelson went undercover at a local high school outside Chicago near where the film was shooting, and convinced the teenager that he was a legitimate student after buying beer for them with his fake ID. He was 24 at the time. Nelson told them to drop him off at a hotel where the actors were staying. Years later, reflecting on his antics, Nelson said they would ask me why I was staying there, and I told them why my dad was in jail. I'm staying at the Western O'Hare while my dad's incarcerated.
Well.
The David Bowie quote and the beginning of the movie is pulled from the song Changes. It can be found on the 1971 album Hunky Dory. And it was suggested the quote that John Hughes, who liked it, and thus included it in the opening. So we'll take a pause here and a break, and let's go with David Bowie and Changes.
And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man. But never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't tell them to blow up on all of it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Where's the shame you've left us up to her next to me?
Time may change me, but you can't twist time.
Strange.
You're on Remember That Film on 2MCE with Adam and Em and The Breakfast Club we're featuring today. And we're in the middle of behind the scenes, but you just heard David Bowie and Changes because of the quote that was played right at the start of the movie.
I love that song.
It's a great song. And we've got some more stuff to go through. The theme song, which we played earlier, Don't You Forget About Me, was written for the film by Keith Forsley. It was a number one hit for Simple Minds, and Billy Idol and Brian Ferry turned down the offers to record it first. Although in 2001, Billy Idol recorded Don't You Forget About Me as a bonus track for his Greatest Hits album. The song was also turned down by the Pretenders, who suggested they offer it to a band fronted by her husband at the time, which was in Simple Minds. So many passed, and it's like Eye of the Tiger, you know, that got passed up because Queen, Another One Bites the Dust, said no. It's funny how all these songs became big.
And all the famous artists at the time turned them down.
Yeah.
And then they become the hit of the decade.
It's an iconic song. John Hughes originally wanted The Breakfast Club to be a 2.5-hour movie. Now, it was only 97 minutes. Yeah. However, many of the scenes were cut out and the negatives destroyed. John Hughes said in the premiere that he had the only complete copy of The Breakfast Club on film. Among the cut scenes from the movie, some filmed, some only written. Ah, and there's a lot to get through here. Yeah. Carl predicts where the five kids will be in 30 years. Bender will have killed himself. Claire will have had two boob jobs and a facelift. Brian would have become very successful but die of a heart attack due to the stress of the high-paying job. Alison will be a great poet but no one will care. And Andrew will marry a gorgeous airline stewardess who will become fat after having kids.
Wow.
A bit dark, some of it there, but yeah.
I think it's good that they left that to the imagination.
Exactly. I like how it ends, and you've got to imagine what it will be like the Monday, the following
who
week
knows,
to them.
Especially because they do seem to resolve a lot of their own personal issues when they are in detention. They find out that each person, even though they don't know each other, may not like each other, they still face the same problems.
That's right.
And they open up and they learn new things and they grow, hopefully.
A dream sequence, Alison imagines Andrew as a glutinous Viking, Bender as a prisoner, Claire as a bride, Brian as an astronaut, and herself as a vampire. I can see that. Yeah. In an unfilmed alternative to this dream sequence, all five kids imagine random things, including cars, naked women, Godzilla, beer, and fighting planes. And these things end up filling the room until Vermin interrupts. Wow. Imagine getting the full cut of this.
Bender
was not going to walk to school in the original script. He was going to be driven by his dad in a rusty tow truck and have a brief fight with him before his dad drives off. Bender was also tossed a bagged lunch with his father saying, "You're a waste of lunch meat." Yeah, we get introduced with him just walking across the road, not caring the car there with Bender. You don't see his dad at all.
No, you don't.
After Bender demonstrates life as a big Bry's house, Brian stops Bender and corrects him with a much more pessimistic version of the skit. Claire then proceeds to act out her life before asking Bender to demonstrate his version. Bender's routine changes as well here. After Bender mimics his mum, he stops commenting that then they make me work to pay off the dentist for the teeth he busts. Yes, there's a lot more deleted stuff.
Yeah.
The scene where Andrew and Alison are walking to get the sodas is extended to a point where Alison pulls out a pack of cigarettes and smokes one. After getting the sodas, Bender shakes his can violently and places it among the five to see who gets the rigged one. Alison ends up getting it, and when she opens the can, all the sodas squirts directly in her mouth. We've got to get a copy of this.
Doesn't she lick it off the table?
Yeah.
So part of that is
might have
still
been deleted
it.
From that.
Yeah.
Yeah. After Vermin asks who has to use the laundry, the five go to the bathroom. Vermin gives the boys 2 minutes and the girls 3 minutes. Claire catches Alison in a stall eating a bag of chips, repulsing her. Bender mocks Brian for sitting down to pee instead of using a urinal. Oh, dear. When the group is sitting in the circle and Alison mentions that she can write and do other things with her toes, she was going to follow up with an actual demonstration. Yeah, that was the lipstick, yeah. Several staff members were cut out of the script before filming. Dr. Lang, a social studies teacher who dresses oddly, and Robin, a gym teacher. Robin helps Vermin on a workout machine until Vermin injures his back and he eventually visits the students where they are in a circular in the library. Robin initially replaces many of the Carl scenes, and Carl was originally set to be a minor character with only 2 scenes. Okay. So, yeah, they said only the 7 actors in there.
Yeah, well. Well, Janitor Carl actually, even though he plays a small role, he plays a very significant role.
Like, yeah.
I think he has a big impact on
everyone's
life. Well, on the day. It's,
yeah,
it's
on the day,
about
yeah.
One day.
One day, yeah. During a cast reunion in honour of the film's 25th anniversary, Ali Sheedy revealed that a director's cut extension may possibly be available. So we'll see if that'll ever happen. 2.5 hours. That's an hour and a half more.
Wow.
It might go probably a bit too long, you know, to fit a whole day in the same room. You're probably pushing it there.
It kind of ends really, like, it's a very well
paced
movie. I think if it was to be the full version, it might be just too long.
Too long, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if that ever surfaced, though.
It would be good. Now, Nicolas Cage was originally considered for the role of John Bender. I can see him playing a bit of a nut at that, a young Nicolas Cage.
When he had hair.
Yeah, when he had more hair, you know, piece off, But the production could not afford his salary at the time. John Cusack was originally cast as John Bender, but John Hughes decided to replace him with Judd Nelson before shooting began. The marijuana the actor smoked in the film was actually oregano.
Ew.
Yes. According to Molly Ringwood, Claire was originally scripted as having pasta salad for lunch. Ally Sheedy, Allison, suggested to John Hughes that Claire eat sushi for lunch, which was generally considered a luxury food in America during the mid-'80s.
Yeah, and she has a little bowl with a soy sauce and a little table that she just pulls out.
All these different foods. It was making me hungry last night at 11 o'clock at night, actually. Karen Lee Hopkins was cast as Robin. We already got that one. Karen Lee Hopkins was cast as Robin as a gym teacher who gives the teens advice. But after one day of filming, Hopkins was fired and her scenes were rewritten for Carl, the janitor, who we mentioned before. According to the book John Hughes, A Life in Film, Molly and Ally Sheedy objected to a scene in which Robin was seen nude in the locker room. So John Hughes deleted her character. In a recent article in AV Club, Judd Nelson said that most of the close-up shots he did with Molly were with her double, since Molly was only 16 at the time, a minor and had to be in school during much of the shooting schedule, and they couldn't work her after hours either during the strict labour laws with minors. Yeah, that's why we had the Olsen twins for Full House, because had strict laws. Yeah,
hours, because, very, very strict laws. It still is, but it's different now.
Yeah, so I didn't know that about using your body double. Judd Nelson would harass Molly offset in part of method acting. He would make fun of her blind musician father, touch on other hot button issues, and tease, harass, and bully her, much like his on-screen persona. In the book in the Hughes 80s teen phenomenon movies, You Couldn't Ignore Me If You Tried, which is taken from a line from the movie, Ringwood said she knew what Nelson was doing and was not fazed by his method actor attacks. Although Hughes was not so tolerant and understanding, he almost fired Nelson because of his antics. He also said he would never work with Judd Nelson again, which we touched on before. And in today's day with the Harley Weinstein stuff and all these coming out, the Me Too movement, all that, there was no way you'd get away with this now.
No, not at all.
That type of method acting.
It's kind of sad because the characters seem to have a really good on-screen rapport towards the end when their characters develop a sort of understanding and a friendship. But it's sad that they had to deal with that off-camera.
Yeah, because, they get together at the end. It's implied, and so does Andrew and Allison.
Yeah.
Because they had an understanding of each other and felt each other. I thought that was really nice. Which is part of the reason why we chose this as a Valentine's Day special.
Two love stories in one.
Yeah. In 2018, Molly, just more about this, wrote an article for the New Yorker magazine in which she criticised the film for the fact that Bender sexually harasses, sexually assaults and bullies Claire. And that despite this, they end up in a romantic relationship at the end. Because, you had the whole controversial scene with him under the desk.
Yeah.
There in the middle there when he's hiding, That's been all behind the scenes. Have you got any other behind-the-scenes stuff?
No, I think we've covered it all. I've learned a few new things today too, actually.
I've only learned this in the last, since watching it. And then doing the research is what I like to. I like to watch the film and do a lot of research, and I'll watch a bit of the behind-the-scenes if some of it is on the Blu-ray. This one was pretty limited, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I did find what was interesting about this film is that the whole start to finish is all on the one location.
Yeah.
It's all filmed in the one room, basically.
In fact, what they had to do was, because they wanted to film in a library, it was too small. Actually had to build the library in a gymnasium to fit it all in there. Yeah, so that was another thing I heard about later. It wasn't in my notes here.
Because it was quite a large library.
Yeah, They actually had to build that, yeah, on the gymnasium.
Oh, and a weird fact that I came across as well. So Shermer High School is the name of the high school in Breakfast Club, but it's also, it's a fictional high school. It's also the same high school as in 16 Candles.
Ah, there you go.
Which is weird.
Yeah, kind it's of sort of linked in the same universe. Yeah. We'll go to one more track now before we get to our final thoughts. And this is the track with the dancing
scene. Yeah, when they've all done a little bit of something naughty and they've kind of let loose a little bit and they run around crazy in the hallways. And just,
Carly DeVito, We Are Not Alone, very, very 80s sounding, this soundtrack. So it really takes you back there. Remember that film here on 2MCE and, Carla DeVito and We Are Not Alone with the dancing scene. That's when they're getting a bit high off what they're smoking as well.
When they find Bender's stash and then they all get into it and then they're dancing around the hallways, jumping off the stairs, having a bit of fun, letting loose, trying not to get caught by the principal.
Yeah, I love that they're running down the hallways and they're trying to avoid him and all the different ones and the gym scene that come up later with the ball. So, yeah, we mentioned before possible sequel. The idea was to have sequels every 10 years. And it never has really come to fruition. So you would have had a sequel in 95. So they, you know, they would have been close to 30 years old then. And then we would have had one in 2005 and then 2015. So you probably would have had, maybe they could come up with a sequel now where they have their kids at school or to the same one. Sort of like what 902 tried to do with the Next Generation. It didn't quite work.
The Breakfast Club, Next Generation.
Yeah. Oh,
that could be the new, that could be a thing. Don't keep that idea to yourself.
Keep that, see if I can write a script for it and send it off. And John Hughes was doing big in the 80s with teen stuff, you know, 16 Candles. Ferris Bueller's Day Off was another one he came up with. And there was Uncle Buck he wrote. Yeah. And at first he was going to be part of Home Alone, but it ended up being Chris Columbus that sort of took over there. Any final thoughts?
I just think this is it's a great classic 80s movie. It gives you all like the true 80s teen angsty high school drama, but filled with a lot of informative like realizations and real life stuff as well. It is a bit, if you watch it now, it's a bit back in the day.
Yeah, because it was before grunge. Remember, grunge really caused that teen angst in the early 90s. So,
I do think it's worth a watch. It is a classic. And spoiler alert, they don't even eat breakfast.
No, they don't. Yeah, it's called the Breakfast Club, which is the final line of it. Yeah.
Yeah. The final line of the movie is one that I still really relate to. I think it's Brian. He says, "Each one of us is a brain, an athlete, a basket case, a princess, and a criminal. Does that answer your question?" And he signs off the letter with, "Sincerely yours, The Breakfast Club."
Yeah, excellent. A great way to end the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then "Don't You Forget About Me" comes on again.
Exactly, with the fist in the air.
And then when I went to bed last night, I couldn't get out of my head again. Song, yeah.
It's one of those songs that really sticks with you.
Yeah.
It's obviously got that. What is it when that song just...
The hook?
The hook.
Yeah,
yes,
I guess the hook.
That hook.
Yeah. That little, the way it just kicks off.
No, I'm going to be singing that for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
Next week, it's just going to be stuck in my head everywhere I look. Don't you forget about me.
And happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there.
Yeah,
so hopefully
Valentine's
everyone got
Day.
Something from their partners, wives, husbands, or whatever it
Single
is out there.
Other.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully now we've inspired you to go watch The Breakfast Club tonight as a couple.
Yeah.
Get it out, you know, because, you know, if I've listened to other movie podcasts before, it made me go, "Oh, I'm going to watch that one now," or try and pinch ideas.
Yeah,
you know,
I rewatched The Fifth Element the other week.
Oh, yeah, see, gotcha.
You did
gotcha
get me.
Gotcha there, yeah.
So check it out. It's a good movie.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show this week.
No, thanks for having me anytime.
All right, catch you later. Bye. Yeah. Bye.